Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The thing I was thinking about this morning, and the thing the Bills haven't done yet, as we approach camp, and then we'll get to preseason, and then the regular season. There is a preseason game this month, by the way. The Hall of Fame game is at the end of the month. And I don't feel like there is a ton of anxiousness for this Bills regular season. I think everybody is excited for it and can't wait for football to be back. And, you know, that's nearing. This is going to be, I think, a less stressful regular season, assuming that something unforeseen doesn't happen, where the Bills, I don't even know what it would be, but would lose 2 years ago when they are 6-6 and they lose to Denver and they're firing the coordinator and it's like, what is happening here? There was a point in time where 2 seasons ago, their playoff probability was like 30% to make it. The reason I can't see that happening this year is, one, big difference then to now with confidence in the offensive coordinator. I think there's way more confidence right now going into this year with Joe Brady than there would have been then with Ken Dorsey. Dorsey had been here a year, and there were mixed results, mixed feelings on how that had gone. Brady did a phenomenal job in his first full season, and even the half season before that. So I guess the league could catch up to him, but I am not expecting that. And the roster is improved, and they're pretty much a team without holes all over the roster. They've got some spots where maybe you'd like to see them do, you know, better than they are on paper. Safety might be one of them. But there's just not this angst with me about their season. So, not really stressed, but there is absolutely one thing the Bills haven't done yet that I'd love to see them do, and I'm going to be all in on seeing them do. And I put a poll up on Twitter, and half of our voters out of three options are saying the same. Like, the reason that this regular season is important is I am all in on getting the one seed. Every year we talk about it. Every year we follow it during the season. Something to chase, right? But it's not yet happened for them. And I do think there is a huge advantage that comes with it. And if they are ever going to make the Super Bowl, I think we've seen time and time again, they fall on the road. Often at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. And I know there is also the one time where they did lose here. So for me, like, depending on how important you see the one seed as, there's also how you see the benefit of it. And I think a lot of people immediately jump to, well, I get home field throughout the entirety of the playoffs. And that's great, especially in the final year of Highmark Stadium. To have home field throughout the playoffs in the final year at the stadium would be special. It would be great because it would set up the possibility of the final game in that stadium's history being an AFC championship where you win to go to the Super Bowl. It'd be an all-time day at that stadium. I'm one that I wouldn't be able to rival. If you were there during the 90s, 51-3, winning Super Bowl, winning AFC championships to advance to the Super Bowl, the comeback game, you've got a million of those. You know, not to say we have none. If you're my age, you've got the New England playoff game, the perfect game. But you don't have a game where you want it to go to the Super Bowl. And that would be awesome. But the real value that I see in getting the one seed, something the Bills have not yet done, is you are guaranteeing yourself the easiest path to getting to the Super Bowl. And you are potentially avoiding Kansas City, which I still want to feel like that is important. Time and time again, they've kind of beaten that respect into you that it would be great to avoid them and to have a run, to have a series of games where you don't have to go to Arrowhead or they don't even have to come here. The evidence of that, in the last four playoffs, really the last three, are the big key to this. You are easily getting the best path. You're getting a free playoff win. That first round bye is critical. Free playoff win. You don't have to potentially lose anybody to injury the week before. You know, I think the rest versus rust debate has leaned rest in recent years as being much more valuable. And then it really sets up for the Bills or whoever would be that one seed winner to have the easier second round game to the point where you might only have to beat one truly elite team to get to the Super Bowl. In the last 3 years, the path of the one seed, starting in 2022, and then I'll work my way up to 2024. Starting in 2022, the one seed's path, Jacksonville, Cincinnati. That's it. Just two, remember. You don't have to play that third game. Last year, the Bills go Denver, Baltimore, Kansas City. That's tough. And you could do that, and teams have done that. I think the Chiefs have done something like that 2 years ago. But that's a tough road, even if they are at home. So 3 years ago, Jacksonville and Cincinnati. That was it. That's all Kansas City had to do to reach the Super Bowl. 2023, Houston, followed by Kansas City. That's Baltimore. Baltimore doesn't end up finishing the job there. They lose to the Chiefs. But what was their path? Beat the Texans and then beat Kansas City. And then last year, Kansas City's the one seed. What's their path? Houston, Buffalo. So 3 years in a row, the winner of that one seed in the regular season has not had to play anybody in week one of the playoffs. And then in week two, have had the AFC South winner. And that 4-5 matchup, can't you see that 4-5 game this year being like Houston and Pittsburgh again? Or Houston and the Chargers again? Or whoever that second place AFC West team is, if Kansas City happens to win it again. The odds of it being like a Baltimore or the Chiefs or somebody, the Bengals, maybe, you know, maybe the Bengals would be a team that you'd be more worried about for that. But 3 years in a row, it's been that AFC South winner. And not to say that that's a gimme or that that team is a pushover, but kinda. Nobody ever takes the winner of that division seriously. And I can't imagine taking the winner of that division seriously again this year. So really what it is you are most likely, if the Bills are able to go through the regular season, they're able to get that one seed finally, which they've never done. You are most likely eliminating the possibility that you are going to have to play Baltimore and Kansas City in the same playoff run. And I think the value of that is far greater than even just the getting to play home field throughout the playoffs. But of course, you get that as well. So you tell me, how important is this Bills regular season to you? Is the one seed enough to be the end all be all of a 17 game slate? Because I just don't. We've talked about New England and their schedule and them coming up a little bit, but I really just can't realistically see the Patriots or the Dolphins giving the Bills a real fight, a real stressful fight during this season. What is the thing at camp that I should be looking forward to other than just camp is back?
Trubisky versus Mike White.
I guess that is a battle.
It's something. I'm not sure it's a battle. You know what I was thinking of the other day was Cole Bishop.
Okay.
He missed most of training camp last year with a shoulder injury. Yeah. And it put him behind the eight ball to potentially having a route to being the day one starter in front of DeMar Hamlin. And now it kind of feels like he's penciled in ahead of Hamlin.
I think he has to be. And ahead of, they had Derek Forrest in the offseason who started some games for Washington. Yeah. But they would want Bishop to start.
No doubt
they would want Bishop to show them at camp that, like, this isn't even a competition. Like, he is the starting safety.
Would that be the thing that you'd panic about the most in this team, is if he showed up to camp and looked like he did last year?
The thing I would...
Lost a little? Maybe that's dramatic, but I kind of felt...
Yeah, what's the thing I would panic about the most?
Would it be him not being good?
If it's not him...
Because they sort of need one of the, like, you know who Taylor Rapp is. He's fine.
Like, he's fine.
He doesn't kill you, and he's not a top 20 player at the position.
Last year, Pro Football Focus, he was, I think, the best rated tackling safety in the league, and also one of the worst coverage safeties in the league. So he gives you some things, and he leaves you, you know, wanting in other areas.
I think they really need him to be good. Cole Bishop. They need Cole Bishop to be good, and they need him to be good right out of the gate where he's being talked about on that side, because the position needs someone to step up and be a good player. And they need for God's sakes, they need a second round pick to really come out and show out and be a player that they can look to and say, like, this is a building block. They got two more years of a second-round rookie contract and have a – like, so they were – you were talking about the show yesterday about them talking about James Cook. Well, I was listening when they had Jeremy Kahn on from Baltimore. And hearing him talk about – and then kind of just mentioning out loud, like, how good that Ravens secondary is. All of them are first-round picks. All of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And –
they have something like 9 first-round picks or something that are their projected starters.
That group in their defensive backfield is probably the best in football. So comparing it to them, I mean, whatever. I just think, like, I look at this defensive backfield and I say, it could be better than it was last year. How much better could it be? Because it kind of needs to be a lot better. And they focused almost all of their offseason resources on the defensive line. And then they added a bunch of fourth, fifth, sixth rounders to that defensive backfield, and obviously their first rounder and Maxwell Hairston. But, like, they kind of need Hairston to be good right out of the gate.
I think the need for that is greater than a lot are giving credit for it.
He needs to be good out of the gate.
This is where I would almost say Hairston showing up and being good right away is more important than Bishop doing it. Because if Bishop doesn't do it, safety is a position where I feel like I could get away with just being okay at the position. They kind of did it last year.
How long into training camp before, like, isn't there a free agent safety out there, like a good veteran? Is it Simmons?
I think he signed.
Did he?
He was on the market at one point in time.
There is, like, one starting caliber level, end of the career type guy that's still available, I'm pretty sure. Like, how long into training, how long is it going to take for you to panic on their safety position?
He might actually be available. Justin Simmons was with Atlanta last year, and I don't see him on a team at the moment.
So he's out there. That's probably one of the more popular Facebook AI articles, is the Bills being connected to him. But, like, I wonder how quickly you look at this defense and say, okay, well, you've got two guys, Christian Benford, Taron Johnson, that you know you can rely on. And Johnson has missed time, but I think you feel really good if, like, Cam Lewis has to step in. I think you feel fine. You've watched it before, and I thought he played well in place of Taron Johnson when he hurt his arm last year.
Yeah.
Plus, you've got other pieces that you've drafted. Dorian Strong, Hankook. Like, they've got guys back there, like, worst case, if Taron Johnson goes down. But, like, if Cole Bishop isn't good,
yeah,
that's a problem for them.
Is it a bigger problem than if Hairston shows up and isn't good?
I think...
because to me, if Hairston shows up and he's just not ready, he's getting bullied by Coleman or whoever at camp, and it becomes evident, like, he's going to have a little bit of an adjustment because he's smaller.
Yep.
And what are other offensive coordinators going to do? What is Andy Reid going to do when he sees Max Hairston across the field? He's going to try to get his biggest wide receiver matched up against him. That might be a poor example because I don't know if Kansas City has a big receiver that they can really threaten you with. But when you play Tampa, what's Tampa going to try to do? They're going to try to get Mike Evans.
Yep.
On Maxwell Hairston, and if he looks like he's having a tough time with that, and it might keep him from being on the field, I would be more worried with their depth at corner. I know they've added a lot of bodies.
Their floor is much higher, I think, than it was last year.
At corner?
Yeah.
Because last year they're at Elam. And Elam is the next man up, and for that I would agree with
and
you because you just can't you couldn't trust him.
You couldn't
they
trust
couldn't,
him.
They couldn't trust
the
him
volatility
at all.
There. It would be like, oh, it's right. either an interception or he's giving up a touchdown or getting a penalty.
It's a different type of concern, I guess, than what Elam was. Elam was, I just don't know. I can't.
They
couldn't trust him. They had to back him up 10 yards in the AFC Championship game, whereas I think they would trust Tre'Davious White and
Dane Jackson,
but I also would expect they would get cooked out there.
Yes.
By any reasonably good wide receiver.
Over the course of a game, yes. But I think down in, down out, you feel better and you feel like you're going to trust that they're going to be in the right position, whether they make the play, especially Dane Jackson. That sort of was his MO here, right? He'd be in position to make a play and wouldn't make it.
Yeah.
But at least you could trust that he's not going to blow a coverage.
Maybe that's right. Man, I think Tre'Davious White is going to tug on the heartstrings a little bit because he's the first draft pick of Sean McDermott, and he's an all-pro Bill. He's a Wall of Famer. If there's a Wall of Fame at the new stadium or Legends Park, whatever they're going to end up doing, like, Tre'Davious White is in it. So he has that coming in, but what I saw last year when he was in L.A. especially, and then even to some extent when he was in Baltimore, is if he's on the field, you want better.
Yeah.
It's a problem if he's on the field. He is not as athletic as he was when he was with the Bills. Now, maybe I should give him camp to see, all right, torn Achilles is what he was coming back from.
And last year.
A full year to recover.
Right.
A full offseason now without rehabbing every single day. Maybe he could look a little bit different. But I'm skeptical that him at 30 years old is going to look drastically different than what you saw last year. And I think if you get any version of what Tre'Davious White was last year, I think he's going to be playing games for them. And it's going to look like, how much do the Bills know it? Because I do want to give them credit in this regard, too. If they see Tre'Davious White getting cooked out there in any isolated situation out on the field, what are they going to do? They're going to insulate him.
Yeah.
They're going to protect him. They're going to leave Christian Benford maybe a little bit more on an island than they normally would. And they will, you know, they'll wait coverage to Tre'Davious White's side and make it they'll make it look like he's actually performing well, even though he's getting more help than the other guy is.
Isn't this your best argument? I mean, maybe incidentally, that, like, it might be more important for Cole Bishop to be the player that is good this year.
Because harder to do that with a safety.
But because then at worst, if you go with Hairston, because you're like, this guy needs the reps, he needs to get in there, he's gonna have to learn, you know, trial by fire.
Yeah.
You need to feel like you've got a safety over the top that you can insulate him with. And the same as if he's not ready and Tre'Davious White or Dane Jackson has to play.
Yeah.
You need to feel like you've got a safety back there, at least one guy in coverage. We know that Taylor Rapp is not the coverage guy. Well, then Cole Bishop needs to be that. He was supposed to be coming out. He was the athletic profile, great res, like, can cover, can play in the box, can tackle, it's physical. Yeah. Can cover, can man, zone, man, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that player needs to be, to me, that might be the biggest storyline for me is, how long Is he a player that when you see the starters on defense, mm-hmm. that he is a standout? That he's a player that's all over the field, that's making plays, tipping balls, making interceptions? Like, to me, that will be the storyline for me, because I think there's a ripple effect on who you feel comfortable with at corner.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can feel comfortable playing Maxwell Harrison in giving up some of the lows that you're going to get with a rookie, regardless if he was the number one pick or the number 31 pick.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, you can maybe mitigate those lows if you have somebody that can insulate him behind the scenes in coverage. And to me right now, if it's not Bishop, I don't know that they've got somebody back there right now.
803-0550, if you have a thought on this. Kind of like if you could get one player on defense that isn't already this to stand out at training camp, who would you pick? A Bishop might be the most popular answer. I think Hairston would be right up there as well. Hairston, too, you know, like him fighting for that starting job, that will be one of the biggest storylines when mm-hmm. we get to training camp. And you said kind of just throw him in trial by fire. I kind of do prefer they just do that.
Yeah.
That if it's close at all, you do just put him in because, you know, like I had this conversation yesterday about how important really is this regular season for the Bills. And I do think getting the one seed is important. Broke down yesterday, you know, like what the difference in your path to the Super Bowl has been over the last 5 years, whether you're the one seed or if you're the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills' path has been extremely difficult. They have had to play two of Kansas City, Baltimore, Cincinnati.
Yep.
Every year, their path has included two of those teams. The one seed has played the AFC South winner 3 years in a row,
right,
followed by one of those teams. So you have to only play one of them. So with that being said, the season is still mostly about January, mostly about what they look like when you get to the playoffs. And for Hairston, how much should I care if he is, you know, getting picked on a little bit early on, going through some growing pains early on? If it's in the name of, well, this is good for his development,
right,
by the time we get to end of the regular season, by the time we get to playoff time, he's more comfortable because we allowed him to grow through all of that.
Yep.
That is one thing I don't think is ever brought up about Kyrie Elam and how his development or how he just never turned into anything that they could use. And I think a lot of it just gets attributed to he wasn't a very good player, right? Like, he just wasn't a very good player. He didn't have great instincts for what they wanted.
And he immediately got outplayed by their sixth-round pick.
That's right.
Immediately.
They did not do that with him, though. There was no, oh, he's going through some growing pains. Let's just throw him in.
Well,
there.
If you
he
remember,
played a little bit.
He had an injury, and
in
it
what,
opened the
year?
Door. Yeah, and it opened the door for Christian Benford.
Okay, don't. Remember
and Christian that. Benford played the first couple of games of that season,
mm-hmm.
and then basically it was okay. Well, Benford's just better,
right? And that was maybe becoming a bit of a storyline
right away.
Right, like camp.
Like
and
camp
preseason.
Right away. It was who's this kid from Villanova?
Right. He did play. So Elam played in his first game as a Bill, that opener against the Rams. He did play 44% of the snaps. So they had him in a little bit, but that's not.
I think him and Benford both played in that game.
Yeah, Benford looks like played like every snap.
Yeah.
Benford was in there full time. Elam played a little less than half. So he would have been rotating in with somebody else.
That's 3 years ago?
That is 2022.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his first game as a Bill, 2022. And that could be the Hairston plan. Similarly, if
insulate him with Tre'Davious White, and maybe, Trey White plays 60%, he plays 40.
Right, that's not a position where they typically would rotate, but maybe
they've shown a willingness to.
Yeah,
the last time they brought in rookies
and had a first round pick that maybe they didn't fully trust yet.
Yep,
they still wanted to see him. They still wanted to get him game action. So he worked his way onto the field a little bit early in the season. By the way, Baltimore, Jets, Miami, New Orleans. What kind of test is that for rookie corner? The first 4 weeks, first month of the year. Baltimore's the quarterback.
They do.
But
they don't have the receiver. Zay Flowers is a nice player, but they're not shaking. I'm going to tell you right now, like, I don't think Bobby Babich is like, oh, what we got to do is make sure we stop Zay Flowers. No, I mean, everyone knows what the situation is.
You know what I do if I'm Baltimore and Maxwell Hairston's on the field, though? Even though he...
DeAndre Hopkins?
I was going to say, even though he's not the player he once was at all, I'm putting my veteran big physical receiver against the rookie small corner.
Yeah.
And I'm expecting to get pretty good results if I'm the Ravens. The Jets with Garrett Wilson. The Dolphins, you would think that would be perfect for Hairston, right?
Yes, speed.
All they have is speed receivers, and that guy just runs fast. And then New Orleans, we'll have a guest about the Saints a little bit later on as we kind of work through the Bills' schedule. And the Saints have Olave, but nobody to get him the football.
Shaheed,
that's speed. See, the speed receivers are the guys I think I don't want to be worried about.
I think I agree with
that. Who's your big physical route-running receiver? If you don't have a guy like that, I feel a little more comfortable with Hairston being on the field. In that first month, Hopkins, but he's aged.
Yep.
And then Garrett Wilson, I think, would qualify to some extent.
I would agree.
On that.
I also might say
that's about it.
You're going to get – so I kind of posed the question, like, how long will it take for the Bills or maybe just fans to panic a little bit about Cole Bishop during training camp if he just doesn't look the part?
Yeah.
Talk about trial by fire. I mean, you're getting – you're going to get tons of 2-12 personnel, two tight end packages. Isaiah Likely, one of the more athletic tight end profiles in the NFL. Mark Andrews,
yeah,
who's going to have a, you know, an axe to grind in that game a little bit. Mm-hmm. You're going to need a safety that can match up against a 12 personnel,
yeah,
both as a physical run defender, but as a downfield pass defender as well. Like that first game, I think you're going to learn a little bit about the secondary. Maybe not at the corner position, but what they've got at safety, that's going to be one right away they're going to get tested on.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I think I saw a tweet from Sal Mariana of the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle.
Yep.
Where I was like, I know the anger behind that tweet. Like, it was like, sell the team, fire everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm like, oh, it's just like a Tuesday night from October to April for Sabres fans.
Yep. Yeah. Where are you at on them?
I don't care.
I mean, we're still waiting for the move that was supposed to be like their number one move of the offseason,
really.
Right?
I mean,
we're just waiting for a Byram trade. That's now until the start of the season?
Yeah, I guess.
Or until whenever they actually end up making it.
But kind of waited too long and probably won't get the same value they would have got for him like a month ago.
Yeah. When you say that, was there anything they could have done that would have got you really bought in?
Overpaid for somebody.
Or is
like
it
grossly overpaid for somebody.
Okay. Like, if they'd signed Nikolai Ehlers $10 million dollars a year.
Whatever.
You would have been in?
Yep.
In on the season, not just on the signing. Like,
fine.
Because I do think there's a growing crowd of, it doesn't matter what they do, I will believe it when I actually start seeing them stack some wins.
Want to know why there's a growing crowd of that? Because they don't ever try.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're getting mad about fantasy. We're getting mad about potential moves and using that as an excuse when in reality, they don't make any moves.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the J.J. Paterka trade, I get it. But to me, you traded the best. You got rid of the best player
sure.
in the trade.
Of course they did.
I think you maybe Doan will be a nice third line player for them. And Kesselring will be a great second pair defenseman and maybe even elevate Owen Power next to him. I don't know. But I can tell you that if there's no way this was the plan that they sold Rasmus Dahlin on.
No.
There's no way.
No, I can't imagine that they, you know, when the season ended in April, that they thought their offseason would consist of Paterka out and
Justin Byram, Danforth.
Byram not out. And right, their five biggest acquisitions being two from Kesselring, Doan, Alex Lyon, and Justin Danforth.
Yeah.
fantastic.
Like, that's not really... It's not a serious... It's tinkering. It's not a real offseason from a team that would be desperate to win.
It's moves made by a team that is just... that has a great roster and is just tinkering. They just don't make moves. They don't make big moves.
Or they are moves by a GM that either can't or doesn't know how to make big moves like that.
Yeah.
And it could be the former. It could be can't.
Don't you want to feel like he's trying?
It can't totally be can't.
To me, it's why aren't they? I want to feel like I see them get rejected in. I want the Sabres offered Ehlers $10 million and he said no.
I know. That's where I'm not sure everybody agrees with that, but I do. I believe like when they
I would give them more benefit of the doubt if it was like, well, they were in on four free agents. They offered the most money by $2.5 million and players just won't go there.
Like when I see that the Sabres were trying to spin Paterka into Noah Dobson of the Islanders, who got Norris votes two years ago and just got a $9.5 million contract from Montreal. Like, when I see the Sabres wanted that guy and he told them no, I think good on them for trying.
Yes.
Good on them for going for the big idea and not just going immediately for, I'll take your third pair defenseman, then we're going to put in a bigger role. That's where they end up. So I guess at some point, that's what matters, right? But I want to believe they're at least trying to make these impactful moves. And other than, like, that Dobson rumor, like, you haven't seen anything. I don't know. Did they call on Ehlers? Did they try? Did they offer him something? I don't know.
I
haven't seen anybody say it.
It's weird that I feel like I really would feel better if they were just in the public doing whatever they could, willing to overpay by $2-3 million.
Yeah.
And guys just saying no. Like, it's just, we're not interested.
Like, you have seen, you do see that from other teams.
Yeah.
Like, when Paterka gets dealt, I've seen maybe four different reports from other markets about, hey, our team did try.
We wanted them.
Michael Russo from Minnesota.
Yep.
He reported, tweeted out, whatever, that Bill Guerin, the Wild GM, had offered Marco Rossi.
Yep.
And that was a part of his package that he wanted Paterka. There was a Friedman quote about the Leafs being in on Paterka, and the other teams have tried. So, like, you see other teams put in the effort, and then you learn about that. I think that is good PR for where the Sabres are at.
They need something.
Failing again and again and again and again is not also a great look, but I think it's a worse look.
To not try.
To not swing at all.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, their reputation. I think their fans believe, Sabre fans believe, that their team isn't even trying to make these big, impactful moves.
And maybe they are.
I think that's worse.
And maybe they are, and we just don't ever hear about it. But I just, then how come we hear about other people trying?
Well, we heard about the Dobson one, so maybe were they ready to make a pitch to Marner?
And have another...
Not even to get him. Did they have a pitch ready? Were they going to have a
slideshow?
If they could get to it, was there going to be a meeting? Or did they just never call? Never call the agent.
I would bet they probably never called. That one, you just... But even so, like, be the team that offers 14. I don't know.
16, 17.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Do something desperate.
Dramatic and desperate.
Do something desperate. Yeah.
Because
do something Darcy has become do something desperate.
The alternative is what they've just been doing, which is not getting them anywhere.
No. I mean, I still will continue to say that the year they make it, I got to this point with the Bills and said this about the Bills. I believed at some point in the drought, I resigned myself to with the Bills. The year they make it, we're not going to expect it. They're going to make it one of these years, and it's going to feel like they got lucky here, they got lucky there, and they squeaked in when nobody saw it coming. And that is exactly how that played out. That team that made the playoffs for the Bills was not necessarily good.
No.
Negative point differential. They had a lot of turnovers, right? So they got some breaks to go their way. Obviously, the Tyler Boyd play is a break to go their way. And they made it, and no one was expecting it. People thought they were going to tank that year. That's probably going to be the Sabres' existence too. The year they make it, it's going to be, you know, they're expected to be like 24th in the NHL, and they get a hot goalie and a hot power play, and bang, bang, there they are. They're in. Just like that. And yeah, no one saw it coming. That's the best I can do, though. And that's not a great place, though, to be with your team where it's throw your hands up and go, well, one of these years they got to get lucky.
And isn't it a little bit too, at least for me, this is the case. It just feels like they're trying to build a team to win, to break into a wild card spot. They're not building a team that is going to, hey, that's a pesky team. They're going to get in. They might make some damage. They might win a round. Could they do enough to get swept in the first round of the playoff series?
What would that be? What would that move be? Is, oh, look, they're trying to win more than just get in. I mean, that would be, you acquire a star goalie, right?
Or
you land on Jake Oettinger somehow. Or
Jason Robertson.
Yeah, that's the move that everybody wants. This is what that move would be.
Yeah.
Mark in Buffalo is next up. What's up, Mark?
Joe, how are you this morning?
Good.
I said I wouldn't call back in. I was done when they didn't hold ground on Paterka. But
you're back.
There has to be an underlying reason. There has to be. It has to be that Pegula's calling the shots or somebody up above that owns a team. They must want to decimate the team and move the team or sell the team, because there's absolutely no way that they're this inept. Now you're going to hold your ground on Bo Byram, whatever. You didn't hold your ground on Paterka. You didn't hold your ground on Eichel. You didn't hold your ground on Ryan O'Reilly. You had that guy from St. Louis they got in the O'Reilly trade. He left $20-some million on the table to get out of this organization. What is wrong? I mean, I'm not a Sabre hater. I've told you guys that. I mean, I'll use that line. I'm one of those old guys. I'm a Sabre lover as much as you guys. But there has to be an underlying reason. There's no way. There's absolutely. Kevin Adams was part of a Stanley Cup organization. There's no way that he's this NF. And Jarmo Kekalainen in 14 years, there's something wrong there. There's something. There's an underlying reason that they're this inept.
All right.
They can't be that dumb.
Thanks, Mark. One thing, they're not trying to – this is not Major League where they're trying to tank the team and then move it. two, I think you could qualify this as an underlying problem. What's the difference between Bo Byram and all those other situations? There's a couple. One of them is he's not as good.
Yeah.
Definitively. He is not as good at what he does as Paterka or certainly Eichel or O'Reilly.
Yeah.
What I think the Sabres have a soft spot for, I don't even know how this could be misconstrued. They are very sensitive to anybody that doesn't want to play on the Sabres.
And they're
or
unwilling,
doesn't want to be in Buffalo.
And they're unwilling to take a chance on a guy to try to prove them wrong.
And the other thing is, that's not being reported about Byram right now. In fact, it's been pointed out from Friedman and other insiders, maybe LeBron was the one who reported this, that oh no, Byram doesn't want out of Buffalo. Like, that's not why a trade would happen. It's he just wants a bigger role.
Yeah.
And he feels blocked by Dahlin and Power.
Yep.
And is that the difference? Is the difference that all those other guys, now they just didn't believe in what was happening here. So, you know, get him out. You don't believe? Out.
Right.
Byram would be like, oh no, guys, I believe. I want to play more minutes.
More. I want more.
I want to play on the power play.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay. Well, we'll hold firm on that guy. Like, it's probably all it is.
They are
very sensitive to anybody that even implies that they don't want to play in Buffalo.
And they need a perfect trade. They need, to them.
But not in those other instances, right? Maybe with Eichel. Maybe with Eichel they needed the perfect trade.
But what they do, though, in all of those situations is they wait till it gets to a point where they have depressed the value of that asset.
They didn't do that with Paterka. That was quick. That was quick, and there might have been better offers on the table. Maybe Dobson was one of them, and he told you no. But that was fast. That was not hold our ground, let's hold firm. O'Reilly was timeline, right? There was a bonus that kicked in on July 1st of that year, and they needed to do it. They needed to get rid of it. Now, Eichel is the only one they dragged out, maybe to get the perfect offer. And even that one, if you remember the timeline on that, Eichel was going to go on television because he had had enough. He had been hurt in April, and it was October, and he still hadn't had a surgery, so his neck wasn't healthy, couldn't even work out or whatever, and the season had started. Dude's trying to get back to playing, and nothing's happening on the trade front, so what does he do? He's going to go on television.
Yeah.
He's going to go on ESPN with Buchacross, and what's he probably going to do?
He's going to ragdoll you.
Exactly. Yeah. So the Sabres traded him that morning. That's not a coincidence.
No.
They got pressed, and they moved him. O'Reilly, there was a timeline. They got pressed, they moved him. Paterka, they just did it quickly.
Yeah.
Byram is the one that they're dragging out and looking for maybe more of a perfect offer. And I think the key difference is they just want to rid themselves of any situation as fast as possible of a guy that implies through reporting or even says it, like when O'Reilly said that he had lost his love for the game, that no, we can't have that. We can't have that anywhere near the facility. And I just think you don't always have to punt in those situations every single time. Paterka was one of those instances where I don't think you needed to punt.
I think, though, I think there's a real scenario where the Sabres say, we're not interested in paying this player $7.5 million. In which case, I'd say, okay.
And that's what you mean with Byram?
Yeah, no, with Paterka.
Oh, with Paterka, yeah.
Yeah, if they didn't want to pay him $7.5 million and they knew somebody else was going to and they wanted to upgrade the defense, okay. But, like, right now, they've waited too long to replace him.
Right.
So now the game of musical chairs, there's no more dance partners. There's no more chairs left.
Yeah.
So now you're sitting there with an asset that you could have potentially moved to get a player to come in and play in your top six on the wing. Now there's nobody left in free. Jeff Skinner's left. How funny would that be?
Sign him. I saw a good chart about Skinner yesterday.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm a big believer that goalies have to support goalies. There's only two goalies or whatever shakes out or whatever. Devin is in the room. I haven't spoken to him at all, but there was a time in my life where I didn't treat the other goalies that well, and it was a mistake. You have to support each other because the reality is in an 82-game season, you need both guys to be going. And you need both guys to win games. And when one guy's struggling, you need the other guy to pick him up for the confidence. I know, like, when I'm struggling and I know that the other guy is going to win a game, it gives me a lot of confidence and it makes me play a lot more freely. It's just such a delicate balance of being very competitive with each other and pushing each other.
Alex Lyon, as a goalie, that's the way you got to sound, right? Goalie supporting goalies.
Yeah, it's.
Or you want to fight your partner?
It's a little harder than you think to not want to fight your partner sometimes.
Right, because it's a competition, really.
It is
at all times, I would bet.
Yeah, everything is a competition. You gotta practice every day, every game you play. In junior, I had a partner, mm-hmm. Benny Halas, who's playing college hockey now. He'll end up playing pro probably in Europe, but he's mm-hmm. good goalie, and we were both good, solid goalies for the league we were in,
mm-hmm.
and we split time 50-50 dead down the middle. And every day in practice was a war with Benny.
Yeah.
And we were best friends, but every day in practice, every game we played was, seriously, it might have been just as intense as the games we played on the weekends. We wanted to beat each other so bad because you knew, this is all I'm competing with you the most directly. It's kind of similar to the F1. You're competing against the driver.
But you have a teammate,
but he's
too.
Your teammate too. Yeah. And so there's a balance to find there. And I found that really interesting from Lyon because there's so many guys that do it differently in that way.
Yeah.
Some guys just don't talk to you. I had partners that wouldn't talk to me. It was just, listen, we're.
Yeah. This is business. This is business.
And then I had guys like Benny, who was legitimately one of my best friends in the world, and I loved him, and we still went to war every day.
Not to bring everything back to golf, but that sounds like, you know, you're doing a match with a buddy on the golf course, and he hits a perfect shot, and you're like, that's a good shot. And in your head, you're like, oh,
Right.
You don't want to beat this guy exactly. so bad. But you're still friendly at the end of it?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's, you know, you fight against when you're young and you're learning how to be a goalie at a you know, a somewhat high level and you start getting competitive.
Mm-hmm.
I think every goalie probably at some point is sitting on the bench and their partner gets scored on and internally you go, yes. And you immediately feel disgusting. And you're like, that's not, that isn't right. And that starts, I think, for many guys, the process of learning how to find that balance that Lyon's talking about there.
Yeah. So real quick on the Sabres and goalies, but also prospects. I was reading Steven Ellis this morning. He's ranking, he's going through all the prospect systems in the NHL. He does not have the Sabres as like the number one prospect pool in the league. In fact, he's not like specifically ranking them. He says they have a top 15 pipeline. So basically just they're in the top half of the league.
Yeah.
So, okay. The Sabres are – he's ranking them their top 10 prospects. Want to guess where he ranks Levi? Their 10 best prospects. Nope.
One.
Not one.
No?
Nope.
Ooh, then now I'm thinking the other way. Is it like five?
It's fourth.
Wow.
He hasn't ranked behind Noah Oslin, Radim Mirka, who they just drafted, and Konstantin Helenius. And he writes about Levi – that he just has not found that way to crack onto the big team, the full team yet. And the Sabres just signed Alex Lyon to a 2-year deal. So some would argue he still has the most upside of any goalie in the Sabres system, but is there a legit pathway to NHL success still? And I think this might be a big year for him.
It is.
Determining at least the reputation of like what he is, what the this star upside that has existed with him since the Sabres really acquired him.
Right.
So this is like 5 years, right? Like 5 years.
Yes.
Of Levi just existing in the back of the mind of any Sabre fan thinking, they got a star goalie on the way. If he doesn't make it to the NHL this year at some point, doesn't have to be right away, but if he doesn't fight his way into their rotation at some point during this season, I think a lot are going to start writing him off.
Yeah.
At least towards being that. Like, okay, maybe he could still be an NHL goalie, but the idea that he's going to be a top 10 guy in the league, that he's UC Saros 2.0, like, I think we would have started to see more of that by now. And there was also this contract situation, which I think most are expecting that to be pretty easy, that he'll just sign as an RFA.
There's some comps for him that are making like above $1 million.
And for him, this was the noise about him when he came out of college, was he only really wanted to sign in Buffalo. It was whispered, but it was like the worst kept secret in town, that he only really wanted to sign in Buffalo if they cleared a spot for him.
Right.
And now that contract is over. And he's an RFA that's not offer sheet eligible. So he doesn't really have much of a play. But if 3 years ago he really only wanted to come here if they cleared a spot for him, and now he has no contract, and definitively they did not clear a spot for him because he would have to really wrestle a job away from somebody. Again, like I don't know what the next step of this is though. Like he might want to find a way to get to a team that is more willing to give him a spot right away and just kind of hand it to him, but I don't know how he accomplishes that.
I think there's a part of that is when he came in, he probably wanted to see, can I jump right in?
Well, he probably thought he could.
Exactly.
Like he was probably confident, I'm going to step right in and I will never go to the AHL.
Right. And so he thought that, rightly or wrongly. I think every guy that's playing at that level should think that about themselves. He came in and went, I need the opportunity to do that. And now what he's done is not forced them to let him in again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with what I know about him as a kid, that I've heard really, really good things about him mentally as a person, as a goaltender, both in and out of the sport. I've heard he's a really, really good guy. I think if he's smart and self-aware and has good people around him, he'll recognize, I didn't force the Sabres to give me the job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a deal. I got to make him do it. And I don't think he will force his way out of this situation to get somewhere where, I mean, how many places are going to give him a spot in the NHL?
Might be tough to find in the first place.
It's not happening, I don't think. Yeah. Not for a guy at that. It's just, there's not those jobs available.
Right.
You find veterans to do that job like the Sabres did find Lyon. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you're getting gifted that job from a team, especially not a team that's any better than the Sabres, because anybody any better than the Sabres has a good goalie.
Right.
Like
most teams are going to have a better goalie room than the Sabres right. are right now.
And so you're not going to find a much easier path than this, regardless of how you feel about
and
what
then,
they did.
And then there's also, like, I don't know what to make of his season. Like, he was great in Rochester again in the regular season, and then in that first round playoff series, he was incredible. But then when they went and played Laval, which was the top dog team right. in the AHL, he got lit up.
I'm seeing a lot. Yeah.
So, like, what am I to make of that? Am I
I don't know.
That's the last thing we saw.
It's the last thing we saw, but it's also
we saw a
massive sample size of him being incredible all year in the AHL.
Mm-hmm.
And then that Laval team was legit. Like, that was a borderline NHL roster team. And, you know, he got beat, but it was, I don't even think it was a 7-game series. It was a 5-game series, I think, and they lost in 3. And
yeah,
three bad games. I am not ready to write off the season he had because he struggled against Laval in April.
That's right, but it's more throwing doubt into the mix of, like, how much should I really count on this guy to someday come be my number one goalie? Because I've been treating it as such really until now, and I still kind of want to believe he's more likely to be the Buffalo Sabres' long-term number one goalie than Lukanen is.
Oh, he definitely. I 100%
but
believe that.
That doesn't also mean he's likely to. Just because he's more likely than Lukanen is doesn't mean that he's likely to be, you know, the Ryan Miller comps. Actually, we have a call about that comp right now. Bruce in Tonawanda. North Tonawanda. What's up, Bruce?
How are you today?
Morning.
I'd like to just basically put a pause on the Devon Levi thing. Let me remind the good listenership that Ryan Miller played 4 seasons in the AHL before he came up. 4.
Yep.
It takes time for goalies to figure it out. It's one of the hardest positions that there is in sports, in my opinion. Who wants to stand in front of a puck coming at you at 100 miles an hour? Not too many people that have a sane mind and body, but no, it took him 4 years to figure it out. And once he came up, he was ready. So let's, if we can, put a pause to this and let him be him and let him figure himself out. And if it happens, it happens. And if it doesn't, I guess it doesn't, but the kid needs some time, in my opinion. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bruce. The only thing about that, though, and in a vacuum, on a well-run team, be totally good with that. Like, right. And that is all reasonable. Miller might have only taken 3 years in the AHL if there wasn't a lockout.
Right.
But either way, it's still more than Levi's play.
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
I guess they didn't necessarily do this offseason. My only problem with, well, just let him sit down there and, like, don't worry about it. It's when the Sabres have treated it as such. The Sabres have planned for goalie in the last 3 years as though he's going to be here.
Exactly.
They plan in 2022-23 where they don't trade for a goalie at the deadline, which is one of the most criminal things I think they have done with Kevin Adams as the GM. They had a playoff team that just needed a few more saves, and they didn't touch it because they were afraid of the college goalie not signing with them.
Yeah.
That year, they planned their goalie room around him arriving. The next year, they planned their goalie room around what? Him being the starter.
Right.
He started opening night, first 3 games of the year.
Right.
Reimer, they waived him at the beginning of the year. They're lucky he was still around, that they got re-waived so they could bring him back. They planned their goalie room three straight years around him being there.
Now
they have finally not done that.
Right. That's the point I was going to make. Like, I agree. I think he does need more time. The Sabres are the ones that need to be told that, apparently.
Well, now they did it.
Right, but it took them. They've got it reversed. Like, they should have been doing what they did this year for the last 2 years and, you know, maybe left a spot open this year. But they didn't do that. And so when they treat him in that way of he's going to be the guy, and then he's not the guy again. Mm-hmm. And then now this year, what's going to happen? That's where I think a lot of fans get, well, what's going on with this goalie? It's been 3 years I've been hearing about this guy. And should he still be in the AHL? Probably. But they've been saying to you, all of us, no, he's ready. He's coming.
Different. He's special.
He's going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
He's got it. And it brings me back to another part about that Lion clip that I found really interesting was at the very end, not in the clip we played, but the full answer he gave. He talked about finding – it takes a long time to find your game, and once you find what works for you, you got to hold on to it and protect it. And to me, that is what takes this time. Levi's as physically, technically talented as he'll be ever now. He needs to learn – his game and what works for him. Do I slide in this position? Do I like playing in a reverse VH on this post? What all this stuff that you got to figure out as a goaltender, it just takes reps and time. And that's what he needs. And so you got to wait for that. And if it's ready, it's ready. And if it's not, you can't force it, because the guy, once you lose a grip on that stuff that works for you. You saw this with Luukkonen last year. You end up guessing and you end up looking a little inefficient and not very good, and you end up not playing very well. And so you've got to try to protect against that, especially with a young goaltender.
I just found just a wrap on this. Again, this is something we bought into. We bought into the Sabres thought through their actions that Levi was different and he was special.
Yeah.
We followed suit. I put a poll up on June 8th of 2023. Would you trade Devin Levi straight up for Connor Hellebuck on a long-term extension?
Oh.
I didn't even do the only 1 year left on his deal. I'm telling you, Hellebuck will sign with you long-term. Would you trade Levi for him straight up? 8,800 votes, and 86% said no. That's where we were.
I mean,
we were hype was nuts,
and that was
holy crap.
The team,
and now,
like,
he's the fourth ranked prospect in the system.
Right. It's crazy. The team. A lot of it was the team forcing him on to people.
Right. We like listen,
in media.
We got suckered.
Yeah.
It was never likely. It was never, ever likely.
No.
To the caller's point, goalies take time.
Exactly.
It never should have been the plan. It never should have been talked about the way it was. I'm guilty of it too. And now we're at a point where I feel like we're in a more reasonable position. It's all that history makes it feel like, you know, we should be down on Levi. I feel like if the expectation was never set that high, we would still feel pretty good.
I think you'd feel great.
You'd feel good. Like, he's had a good AHL career. He had a bad series at the end. He's 23. Goalies aren't supposed to arrive even by that age, usually.
No.
Like, without the history of the team saying this kid's going to be different, elite, going to show up earlier than everybody, you would look at him and say, this is a good goalie prospect that's developing around the rate that most do.
Exactly.
Some goalie chatter on July 9th for you. Quickly on this, I did not mean to get to that, but who's the best defender under Sean McDermott ever?
That's a really good question.
For the Bills. Not going back to like Luke Kuechly with Carolina. Who's their best? Is it Hyde? Longevity is going to matter here. Milano is probably, unless I am missing somebody, the only player currently that goes beginning to end.
Yeah, right.
Matt Milano is on the team that breaks the drought. Like, he plays in the Jacksonville playoff game.
Right.
Between Tyrod Taylor and Blake Bortles and Doug Marrone. And, like, he's in that game. I don't think he starts that game. Should double check. Like, does he ever end up starting that season? He starts five games for the Bills in 2017. He's a full-time starter every year after that. He was a first-team All-Pro. So, but there's injury seasons in there, right?
Right.
And you've got Tre'Davious White, who was an All-Pro, but then injuries, and he's back now. But right. So I guess he would kind of be the answer.
Be front to back, too, yeah.
But he just took a year in absence, between, yeah. Basically. Those are the three, though, right?
Yeah. Does Teron Johnson deserve to be mentioned in there, too, a little bit?
Maybe, like, if he
gets another 2 years of being elite, top sort of nickel guy in the league, I think he gets in that conversation.
Yeah, right? That's right. Who, if I were putting a poll up, like, who would the four names be?
Milano, White.
You think Johnson would be the fourth?
Hyde. It's between probably Poyer and him, right?
The reason why I wouldn't put Poyer on here is, even though he, I think, is in this tier, because he was an All-Pro, right?
Yeah.
He's in this tier. I'm just taking a pretty educated guess to say I don't think there's going to be many that believe Poyer was better than Hyde was.
Over the course of
their whole careers. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe it should be Poyer.
I have always, to me, they have always been
equals
and sort of just together. In my head, those two have been were such a mainstay, and were both so elite that I never thought to go, oh, I think Hyde's a little better than Poyer. I don't know how I'd be curious how many people out there thought that when they had them both at sort of the peak of their powers.
Right.
Were there people out there like, oh, I think Poyer's better than Hyde? To me, they were just a package deal, and you had the best two safeties that you could have.
Johnson, by the way, to you bringing him up, he was a second-team All-Pro. So that's the tough part here is you got five Bills, unless I'm missing if there's a six somewhere, five Bills that have been an All-Pro on some level while Sean McDermott's been the head coach. I think, though, the other four, Poyer, Hyde, Milano, and Tre'Davious White, all were first-team All-Pros.
Right.
And Taron Johnson was second team, so maybe that should be the reason why he'd be the odd man out if I were to put a poll up on this.
And, yeah, that's fair. And I think Johnson still has time to get himself in that conversation if he's got another two, three strong years left.
Right. He almost goes beginning to end. He's drafted in 2018.
Right.
So that's 7 years already, and he's got a contract. Like, I think he's probably going to go a couple more. He probably ends up being the longest tenured of any of these guys. If he's got like 3 years left in him, which he might. He plays a position where those guys can age, but like playing into their 30s and still be good, but your body's got to hold up, and that can be tough because when you are, I mean, what's Johnson? 5'11", 192,
right,
and you're so commonly being asked to slide into linebacker because teams are running the ball against your nickel base.
And just getting taken on giant blocks.
Right, like your body can just get beaten down over time. It's kind of amazing he actually has played as much as he has.
I've always thought that about him. Like, he's a slight guy, and he gets out there, and he goes against way, way bigger men and just flies through it, and he gets up, dusts off, and he is unbelievable. I feel like every night he makes a good play. He's really impressive to watch because of that almost more than anything.
Yeah. I feel like he's the fifth man, though.
I agree.
Who are people going to answer, you think? Who are people going to say is the best defensive player that they've had under Sean McDermott?
I think Milano will get a lot of love there, and probably Hyde.
Those would be the top two?
I think so. I think White deserves some love on it.
It's
but
just going to, for him, be that it got interrupted.
Yeah, and he,
right.
And when it got interrupted, I think this will probably stick out with the Ravens. He looked so, or not with the Ravens, the Rams. He looked so
shot.
Not himself.
Yeah.
And then, so I think that might stick in some people's minds just as a recency bias thing. And Milano ended up kind of coming in strong at the end of last year and looked better, so I think that'll help. Hyde never really flamed out that badly. So there's not really a picture of those guys struggling for people to kind of think about.
Yeah, and for, you know, I guess maybe the difference there would be, like, really for Tre'Davious White, you only get, I mean, some guys will give you, you know, this and it's fine. We talked about running backs the other day with the Bills and, like, all of them are, like, four-year careers for the Bills. That's Tre'Davious White, really.
Yeah.
Like, it is the 4 years of his rookie contract where he's healthy. Missed only a couple games. He's an all-pro multiple times. He's almost winning Defensive Rookie of the Year in his first season. He kind of walked into the league as maybe one of the better corners in football. And then year five, year six, year seven, all with the Bills are injuries.
Right.
He gets hurt on Thanksgiving in 2021.
That was so sad.
He comes back at the end of 2022. Six games played there, and he started, but he wasn't the same. He
didn't look,
And then the next year, he started to look back to his form, and then bam.
Achilles.
So it's six. It's 11 games, then it's six games, then it's four games. So I've got three seasons that are kind of interrupted with injury. And, you know, like Milano, you could have the injury part of it as well, where he has two seasons where he's really had that interrupted. That's the thing about Hyde and Poyer, though. Hyde and Poyer didn't really have that happen. They had more natural deterioration in their, games.
Time.
Right. But, well, I guess Hyde did miss a full year, didn't he?
Yeah, that's true. Was that a neck injury or something?
He had a neck injury. He missed the one full season, 2022. Poyer, I guess, played it pretty much all the way through, but he looked pretty shot at the very end.
There were times at the end for him where it was like, whoa. He can't run anymore.
Yeah. Really. Like, that's why I'm kind of curious how this would go and what people would say, because I think most would often just group them all together. Like, this is the top tier of Bills defenders in the McDermott era.
Yeah, it's similar
and
to that.
And you don't often even think about separating them. Like, thinking to yourself, like, especially Poyer with Hyde, I've never really thought much about who's better. Who's better than the other? Because they were just, you know, they're a package deal. It's Hyde and Poyer the whole way through. Although even that might kind of lend yourself to which one you might prefer. I feel like I always put Hyde first when I name the two. But that's just me.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.